Episode 3, our first guest. Rusty and I interview a friend of his, Greg Carey, who is a sports reporter at Metro News West Virginia. We talk Wyndham, the FedEx Cup, LIV Golf, and all things PGA Tour. Welcome back to Web 3 Putts. It is Sunday night. We're recording a little early this week, but we do have a special episode. This is the first time we've got a guest speaker, so it's a first for us, Rusty. I'm going to let you introduce him and just kind of give us a little rundown on everything here.
Appreciate it, Cole. Yeah, tonight we're going to be having Greg Carey, sports reporter for the Metro News in West Virginia. Greg's one of my best friends. I've known him basically my whole life. As well versed on the entire sports world as you can get. Him and I were texting this weekend, you know, with the Wyndham Championship going on, talking about LIV, talking about everything going on in the golf world. And, you know, I asked him to come on being our first guest, figuring we'd have a lot of technical difficulties like we did tonight. And no better person to pop their cherry with than with Greg. So, Greg, I appreciate you being here with us tonight and, you know, taking some time. And I know it's, you know, 22 minutes past what we had thought, but appreciate you being here.
Well, it's great to be here. And Cole, obviously, pleasure kind of just, you know, being able to do this with both of you guys. And pretty exciting time in golf, I would say, no matter what your feelings are on all the topics. It's obviously, you know, pretty hot discussion in everybody's world and what's going on in both tours right now. And, you know, I think that'll only kind of continue to pick up over these next few months.
Yeah, a lot of disruption going on in the golf world, but bringing a lot of attention. So, you know, however you feel about it, we'd love to kind of get your thoughts. But I'll let Rusty maybe kick us off. I know we've got some topics we want to run through with you. And again, thanks for being here with us. But Rusty, if you want to kick us off and just kind of. Maybe with the Wyndham, since that was most recently.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Greg, what were your thoughts? I know that one of the things you wanted was to talk after the Wyndham this week. You know, it kind of looked like a LPGA Tour event at the top of the leaderboard. With, you know, what were your initial thoughts on the tournament itself? I know you're a big Tom fan, and now he's in your top five now that Hendrick's probably out. But what were your thoughts on the course, the event, just overall?
Well, to start, the course is it's one of my favorite courses that the PGA Tour plays. I love the history of it. I love the fact that it's a course that really penalizes you if you don't hit the fairways. I think, you know, maybe far too often on the PGA Tour, you can get away with wayward drives, but that's not the case, generally speaking, at Sedgefield. And obviously you can go low there. And, you know, we saw that today with Tom Kim, 27 on the front. You know, by and large, the tournament was pretty much over by the 11th or 12th hole. I mean, obviously a lot could still happen there, but unless he made a really big number or a massive mistake, it was going to be very difficult for anybody four or five shots to come back and, you know, catch him over that final seven, eight hole stretch. But I think a 27 on the front speaks for itself. We've seen Tom Kim over the last month plus, Scottish Open, tough fields, tough conditions, and he's doing it. You know, I mean, he looks the part. And 20 years old, when you have to, you know, secure a win on the PGA Tour to lock up your spot in the playoffs, and you do just that, I think it pretty much tells you where, you know, the stature of his game is today. And while I might maybe not ready to say he's a fully elite player yet, I think he's well on his way to being one.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, he probably locked himself up this week for the President's Cup. I mean, we don't know what the internationals are going to do with the guys that have gone to LIV, Brennan Grace, Louis. But, I mean, at 20 years old, that's what the President's Cup, the internationals want, is somebody young that can kind of carry that torch for him as these guys, Adam Scott gets a little bit older. And again, obviously we don't know what the status is for the LIV guys, but, you know, I think you're right. Like after 11, we knew that the tournament was over. But at that point, we're just looking, maybe after 9, it was basically over. But we're just looking, is Tom Kim going to shoot 59, 58, 57? You know, I mean, he was on pace after a 27 to shoot 54. I know, Cole, you probably had that happen to you this weekend, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I was actually out of town. Was coming back from a wedding today, so I didn't get to watch much golf at all, or play. So it was a terrible weekend.
And you were at a wedding, so that makes it even worse. But yeah, I mean, you know, Sedgefield, you know, great, like you said, it's a great course. It has the history behind it. I think it kind of gets a disservice on the PGA Tour schedule. I mean, if you put it anywhere else on the schedule in the spring or in the summer, you're getting a better field every year. Now you're getting the guys that are on that bubble to get into the top 125, trying to solidify themselves in the top, 75 to top 70, trying to make it to at least a second playoff. I mean, we saw Tiger play there, 2018, had a good showing, probably should have won, but, the golf course itself is great. I mean, all the guys love it that play it, same people. Play it every year. The same people play well every year, with the exception of Webb Simpson this year, who hurt my FanDuel team. But looking at the FedEx Cup, Greg, what did you think? You know, the final standings came out. I did notice that they took the LIV guys out of the final 125. We'll get into that in a second as far as this lawsuit that could catapult some of them back into it. But who really stood out on the top 125 that actually made it? People maybe that you thought, you know, would have expected to make it that are now outside of the top 125. I know Ricky Fowler, we talked, you know, before going on, that's got to be the number one of can't believe he's in the top 125.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising to me sitting here watching it. And that is one thing I will say in regards to the Wyndham field. It's not necessarily anything close to an elite field, but you do get a lot of those neat stories where you're watching maybe a Chesson Hadley, you know, on Sunday, put together a 65, 66, what have you, to, you know, lock up that spot at 110, 112, whatever it may be, and, you know, secure his position in the playoffs. I was particularly, though, a little stumped on Ricky Fowler. You know, it seems like every week you see him, he's battling to make the cut. I know he was maybe playing a little better 6 to 8 weeks ago than what he's done over the last couple months. But certainly some of the guys who you see in that top 120, 125, 115 range, I mean, when you have 15 players that are basically removed from it, obviously it opens up opportunities for those guys. And, you know, I know we'll get into maybe a little bit more of the LIV stuff later, but we had talked a little bit about Tom Kim this week. And when you were talking to me about the world ranking, you know, I'm not all the way necessarily familiar with all of his accomplishments on the Asian tour, but it seems like he would be kind of the perfect poster child for LIV for what they were seeking. And now maybe if he is committed to the PGA Tour, maybe they can do a little bit more of a job, a better job, I would think, of pushing him as a star. You know, I mean, he's 20 years old and appears to kind of have the total package. He's certainly a player that I'll be keeping my eye on the playoffs. Obviously, the way Tony Finau's played recently, we remember last year he had the biggest win to date of his career in the playoffs. And obviously, he's playing exceptionally well. So I would look for him next week to see if, you know, he can continue that. And I know he was winning at events that don't necessarily have quality fields by the PGA Tour standards, but a win's a win. We all know how hard it is to get it. And in my opinion, winning 2 weeks in a row is every bit as impressive as maybe, say, winning a major or winning an elite event.
Where does Tom come from? How did he come up with Tom? Or whatever. Where does he get Tom?
It was said on the broadcast, he was a massive fan of Thomas the Train growing up. That's what the CBS broadcast said this week. He was called Tom because he was a huge fan of Thomas the Train. And I believe they also called him a fast food spot. So he seems to be pretty likable, you know, and I don't know. I thought it was interesting. It's, you know, we talked a little bit earlier over on the 9th, 10th, 11th hole. But when you're 20 years old, you know, you're just one shot away from letting a couple guys back into the tournament. I mean, that's basically how it goes, even if you're 30 or 40 years old. But to me, the composure he showed, you know, 14, I know at Sedgefield is a beast, 500 plus yard par four, I believe, and hit the fairway, hit the green, two putt for a par, just kind of very impressive the way he handled his business. And one thing I think we also kind of have to keep in mind playoffs next week. Obviously, you've got a lot of guys toward the top of the standings who we haven't seen play in a few weeks. How does the layoff matter? How does the layoff affect them? Whether it's a Scottie Scheffler, a Cameron Smith, a Rory McIlroy, whoever. So I think while we would normally expect all those guys to play well, obviously there's going to be a 3+ week layoff since, you know, essentially the British for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And I mean, if looking at going back to Ricky Fowler, what do you think, how many top 20 finishes do you think Ricky Fowler has this season?
I wouldn't guess more than one.
Cole, yeah, you got a guess?
I'm saying zero.
He has one. The one. CJ Cup, he finished tied T3 at the Summit Club in Vegas. Kokrak actually ended up winning that one. But no other top 20s all season. I mean, it's unbelievable, like, how much he's fallen off. One guy that I looked at, maybe I shouldn't be shocked about, but I am, is Cameron Champ. I mean, everyone talks about him, how far he hits the ball, blah, 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 blah. He won recently, last year, I believe, Champ won. And he's, you know, 133rd. And I just feel like somebody with that amount of talent that could do a ton of stuff for this game, being a minority as well, like, I just feel like he needs to be in that top 50 every single year. You need to see him in the first playoff. You need to see him in the second playoff. Get him to the tour championship, because the tour is missing guys like that have that firepower, that pop. And if he can somehow get it together next year and in the years following, I think that's a big win for the tour, because with these guys leaving, that can hit it a long ways, Bubba and Bryson and DJ and whatnot. You know, we need that firepower, the guys that can go out there and just hit it a long way. And I would really like to see Cameron Champ kind of turn it around.
Well, that's what people like to watch, right? I mean, they're there to watch guys get up there and bomb it off the tee. That's why they like DeChambeau, you know. Not much else to like about the guy, but you can watch him hit the ball and it looks, you know, it's awesome, but. I agree. I think you need some of that. I'm not a huge Cameron Champ follower, so I don't know what his problem is. He's a terrible putter, maybe, I'm assuming, because he hits the ball, you know, good, like you said. But, yeah, we definitely need somebody like that.
Needs a Bettinardi. That's what he needs.
There you go.
He's got a lot of boom or bust to him. You know, he kind of reminds me a little bit, not necessarily from a style of play standpoint, but a little bit of Matt Wolf in him. You know, it's like he's either in contention or he's teetering on 80. And I think more so than maybe Matt Wolf or Cameron Champ, though, is, you know, he's a true kind of horse for course. If it's a 7,600-yard course and he need, you know, it requires 340-yard drives, he's going to be just fine. But when you get a course like this past weekend, probably doesn't suit his game very well. You know, it's more about precision, getting up and down when you miss greens, being able to hold 10 and 12-foot putts. And driving the ball 330 and 340 yards is, you know, not very, doesn't factor very heavily into the equation of winning at a course like Sedgefield.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, especially the Matt Wolf thing. I mean, you know, I remember Matt Wolf tried to, he committed to the Honda down at Palm Beach National at the Champ course. And it's like, why? Like, you can't play that golf course. And he shot like 77, 78. Had no chance.
Right.
And, you know, put him at the 3M, put him at the Rocket Mortgage, courses like that,
yeah,
where he can blow it all over the place. I think at the 3M last year or the year before, he was T2. He won, I think, the 3M 1 year.
Right.
But, yeah, I think that's a great point. But that's a good segue going into this. You know, LIV has their lawsuit going into effect. I guess they're, I don't know much about the legal process of it, but it seems like they're having it heard in California, this Tuesday, with the hopes of these guys getting the opportunity to play in the FedEx Cup. I went back and looked at the standings, because the standings as of today, this afternoon, they took out all the LIV guys, but they do have on the website, as of July 31st, they still had the Liv guys in there. So like Taylor Gooch was like number 33. DJ was up there, and a few other guys that are in there that aren't, you know, we're not really that worried about, but I don't know why they're doing it in California. I saw some people that were talking about that California is a very pro employee state, and that's why they're doing it there rather than somewhere else. But what are your, Greg, what are your initial thoughts on this lawsuit? How do you see it playing out, you know, from 30,000 feet above, since we really don't have any idea?
Yeah. And I mean, this is obviously unprecedented time. I will say, first and foremost, I don't think it necessarily comes as much, if any, of a surprise to people. You know, this is something that ultimately over time is probably going to play out through the court system. How it plays out is kind of anyone's best guess. But I do think there are potentially a couple things, you know, working in the favor of Liv golfers. While I know that, you know, a lot of people seem to suggest maybe they've sounded foolish for talking about some of them at least playing on other tours to try to accumulate points in the world golf rankings. And, you know, the whole thing when they first came was maybe they wanted to join Liv so they could play less, more time with the families, more time to, you know, enjoy what they want to do off the course, so on and so forth. But I think the fact that we've at least seen that there is some fanfare at these live events, maybe it's not totally packed. I believe they said there was 25,000 plus at Bedminster last week. The more the time passes, I think the less critical players will, I guess, the less criticism players will receive, less critical maybe people will be. I think that ultimately it's easy to say, you know, money is obviously the driving force and the driving point, but I'm kind of a firm believer that, you know, as much as golfers are playing for winning and legacy, which is why we necessarily care about them, they're also playing for their livelihood. And, you know, I think for somebody like Pat Perez, you'd be foolish not to go to Liv. For somebody like Henrik Stenson, maybe Henrik Stenson has a little bit more left in the tank than what we all thought 8 or 9 days ago. I can't say I thought he would immediately win on Liv Tour, but, you know, he hasn't won on the PGA Tour in 5 years. And most events, he's not good enough to contend on the PGA Tour, but he's obviously a very successful golfer. And I think that Liv will always be a contentious point in golf, but I do believe to an extent, as time passes, it becomes a little more widely accepted. And I think that that doesn't necessarily hurt the PGA Tour or hurt its image, but like we've discussed a little bit briefly, these two tours may ultimately have to find a way to work together.
Yeah, I think eventually they're going to have to come to some sort of agreement. You know, there can't be this huge divide in golf that we have currently where, you know, the golfers have to pick a side. Not, as a fan, you can do both. You can watch both and do whatever. But, you know, there's
right,
a lot
because they're not paying us, right? So these people that just say, like, I'm a PGA Tour guy or I'm a Liv guy, like, get the fuck out of here. Like, you're not getting paid by either one of them. Just be a golf guy. Just like golf. That's all you have to do. Like, everyone on this pod is going to think that I'm the biggest Liv homer there is. But I don't give a shit. I just want to watch golf. And Liv allows us to watch courses that we wouldn't be able to see. Trump Bedminster, which is sick. Doral, which was always a fan favorite and a player favorite. Potentially Turnberry next year. We got some alpha from Greg coming up here about something happening in his backyard. But like, just let them play. And I agree. They're going to have to put it together. They're going to have to come together just like the ABA and the NBA did, just like the AFL and the NFL did, just like all of them, right? I mean, it's the biggest difference we see here with everything is that, you know, the NFL has had the XFL twice. It's had the, the Alliance, that league that, you know, maybe they weren't trying to be competitive with the NFL, but the difference between all these competitive leagues and Liv is Liv has the money, and they have more money than any league can put together out there. So that's why they're always going to be a threat, and they're not going to go anywhere. So let's just figure it out. Let's let these guys do what they want to do, and let's just watch some really good golf.
Yeah, and I think you
I like it.
You have to also include in the fact that they have the money is they are – I don't want to say willing to fail, but they can survive some failure. You know, this is a league that doesn't necessarily have to have a massive profit in, say, the first 6 to 9 to 12 months. And one thing I think is kind of interesting to note about Liv, as you look maybe a little bit just beyond the lawsuit, but looking into 2023, expanding the schedule, 14 events, I believe they're currently at 8. Well, if you get 14 events and you get 6 more added to your schedule, and say 4 of those 6 or 5 of those 6 are in America, you become a lot more attractive for a television deal. You don't, you know, these TV networks will take heat ultimately, whichever one decides to strike a deal with Liv. But at the same time, if you're playing tournaments consistently in Bangkok or Singapore or wherever it may be, it's not as attractive for a United States television network, because, you know, some people will watch Liv, some people don't care much about Liv, but fewer people are going to watch it if it means you have to watch it at 3 in the morning. A lot of people will watch it if you can watch, like you mentioned, some of the, you know, courses of Doral and Bedminster, and, you know, where they could be playing in the States, and people could obviously be watching at a normal time at the same time that they would be watching the PGA Tour. And as they expand, if they do get to a 14 event schedule, and you look at maybe 10, 11, 9, whatever it is of those events being in America, I think it becomes more likely that they strike a strong TV deal, which would then increase its popularity.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to. I mean, it's on YouTube right now. I think I haven't watched any Liv yet, not because I am boycotting it or anything. I haven't had the time to have been playing a lot of golf on Saturdays.
Well, it's not as accessible either. I mean, it's not like,
yeah,
you know, you turn on Golf Channel at 1 o'clock on Saturday after you get done playing golf while you're eating lunch, and or you go in the clubhouse. It's not on TV at the clubhouse right now.
Right.
They're not streaming it. So, I mean, as of right now, you actually have to make it an effort to watch it. Whereas, anything tour related, Champions Tour, Corn Ferry, PGA, like, it's on Thursday, Friday, women's. Saturday, basically from sun up to sundown. And European Tour, it's on there. It's like, it's there. This one, you gotta seek it out. And I think Greg's right. Like, somebody's gonna pull the trigger, and they're gonna give him a TV deal. And if I had to guess, it's gonna be Fox Sports. They don't have a golf, anything connected with the PGA Tour currently. They have the relationship with Greg Norman from the U.S. Open when they had the U.S. Open. Fox Sports has been known to, you know, shit, they hired Skip Bayless, for God's sake. So, you know, this is not anything that crazy for them. That would be my guess. But, like, what if, Greg, what if, let's say this lawsuit goes through, there's an injunction or whatever it's called, and, you know, just like an appeal in the NFL, if you appeal, then you can play the next week until that appeal's heard. So my guess, my assumption is that something's going to happen Tuesday. The Liv guys that are in the top 125 are going to get the opportunity to play in the playoff at least the first week. What would happen to the golf world and the blue blood golf reporters, you being a reporter yourself, I'm not putting you in that category, but these guys that just all they want to do is shit on Liv, shit on Liv, shit on Liv. What if one of these guys, Taylor Gooch, who is, I think, if he got put back in it, he'd be like top 20, I think, in the FedEx Cup. What if he came out and he won 2 events and won the FedEx Cup? What would happen to the golf world?
Oh, it'd be a nightmare for some people. I don't think that's, you know, far-fetched or out of line to say. I think, you know, a lot of people would, A, take issue with those players being able to play in the first place. Not that you're one or I'm one or, you know, whoever. But I think that, obviously, most of the Liv golfers you wouldn't necessarily think are good enough to win a FedEx Cup playoff event or two. Taylor Gooch, I would say, is certainly one who is good enough. Obviously, Dustin Johnson's good enough. I don't think at this stage Brooks Koepka's good enough. We haven't seen really any positive momentum from him in 16 to 18 months. But there are some guys, you know. I mean, Bryson, when he's going right, he can play with anybody, whether you're a fan or not. And I think it would be, and it's going to be an interesting time regardless. I mean, you think back to U.S. Open and kind of the media circus that was there and everything that surrounded Dustin and Brooks and Phil, and then, you know, kind of what happens with each major that passes by, and a few more notable names seem to accept the Liv invite and go that way. But I think you have a very solid point, because I believe there's a better chance than not that there will be an injunction that allows those guys to at least play next weekend. If not, ultimately, you're probably hurting the strength of the field. I mean, you're taking away guys who have deservingly earned the opportunity to play in these events through their success on the course, and basically telling them because they went on with a, you know, a rival league that they're no longer allowed to play. But technically, when you look at the standings and what they've done, you would think that would be enough to say, hey, they've earned the opportunity to play.
Everything I read and saw that was basically pointing to the fact that they were going to be able to play at least the first week. It's the speculation right now.
As they should. I mean, if you look, so I pulled it up. This is, I don't know how accurate. It's on the PGA Tour website, so we'll take that for what it's worth. In the top 125, going into today, you have Brooks at 108. You have, this is great podcasting, Abe Anser at 88. Matthew Wolf at 78. Kokrak at 44. It's kind of shocking. 45, I'm sorry. Sebastian Munoz, did he go?
No, he's still on tour.
No, I was thinking Carlos Ortiz.
Yeah, he's making big bucks here.
Yeah, and then you have Gooch at 20. For some reason,
I would think
they took Dustin Johnson off this because he took his name out of he rescinded his membership with the tour, which is one of the dumbest things because now he can't get his pension. So I guess when you're getting $200 million from Liv or 125, I guess it doesn't matter. But so he's not even in it,
right? In the top
one,
Sergio. I would think he'd be in there somewhere. Sergio Garcia, I would have to think he would be. Is he one of the guys that was removed? I'm just trying to think off the top of my head who would potentially be good enough. Patrick Reed.
Paul Casey was outside the 125.
He was injured a little bit this year too, I know.
Yeah, he missed a lot of – he cost a lot of people a lot of money. Oh, Carlos Ortiz was 107.
Okay.
Reed might have done the same thing that DJ did. I don't see him on here.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, I just think – like you said, Cole, I mean, all signs are pointing to letting these guys play. It'll be very interesting, to say the least, going forward. So, Greg, you have a little bit of alpha for us. So I hear that third leg Greg is not you, but the shark has been hanging out in your neck of the woods lately.
Yeah. Well, actually, credit a tip of the hat. I wasn't actually on site, but last week at the Greenbrier, a good buddy of mine who's a reporter for the Charleston Gazette Mail in Charleston, West Virginia, Ryan Pritt, ran into Greg Norman on the premises of the Greenbrier. The West Virginia State Amateur was actually being held Sunday to Wednesday of last week, so that's why Ryan was down there covering the event of the top amateur golfers in our state. But there had been some rumors that had swirled about 6 to 8 weeks ago. West Virginia Governor Jim Justice was asked on, he was actually doing a COVID briefing or something one day, and somehow it came up and was asked about LIV Golf, and he certainly did not shoot it down. I would say that was in the mid to late June timeframe. You know, talked at length about how he thought it would be great for West Virginia to get professional golf back. Obviously, you guys are both familiar that Greenbrier Classic was played until 2019 for a 10 to 11 year stretch, with the exception of, I believe, 2016, when they didn't have it because of bad flooding on the
course. What was the reason that they took the Greenbrier away?
Well, there was a bit of dwindling attendance, but they also moved it in the schedule. So it used to be every weekend of July 4th. In the last two or three years, they had it after the flooding. When they didn't have it in 2016, they redid the course, and then it became a September event. And I covered it in 2019, which was the year Neiman won it. And that same round three of that tournament on Saturday, the three largest schools all had home college football games that day, if I'm not mistaken, that were nearby: Virginia Tech, Marshall, and West Virginia. And, you know, I mean, you guys are both smart enough to obviously know there's a ton of people that aren't going to come Sunday because of the NFL. But then when you mix in the fact of, you know, West Virginia was at home that day against NC State, I believe. And then Virginia Tech is closer to the Greenbrier than Morgantown is. And then Marshall's a Division I school that's within a couple hours. And, you know, you're not going to have necessarily a ton of interest for a second or third tier PGA Tour event. Jim Justice, you know, he has the reputation he has. He was able to lure a lot of the top golfers maybe back in the day, 10, 12 years ago. Phil Mickelson was a former property owner at the Greenbrier. I believe Bubba Watson still is. Tiger was there sparingly, played in it a few years, I know. But he wants professional golf back. He also has a good relationship with Donald Trump. We've seen over the last week. Plus, you know, going back to Bedminster, obviously Trump was heavily involved. I believe 3 of the 8 events this year in LIV are at his courses. So if there's any sort of tie there and, you know, maybe persuading. I know Jim Justice actually lets his daughter and her husband handle the business side of things at the Greenbrier now. But Greg Norman was there. He met with them. I'm sure there's some negotiations going on. And as we discussed a little earlier, when you're adding 6 events to the schedule, you're going to be increasing where you play. The Greenbrier isn't nearly as difficult as a lot of the courses that they're playing currently on LIV, but it does have a little bit of that LIV field. It's a very well-known resort throughout at least most of the East Coast and Southern United States, if not all of the U.S. It's got a lot of history there, you know, a lot of things that even date back to World War I, World War II eras, and some of the bunkers there were used as hideouts back in the wars, and, you know, a lot of history on the golf course. Sam Snead has won, I believe, 13 West Virginia Open and amateur titles on those courses. So you look at some of the history of it, and it's a resort that offers a lot for PGA players of the past and their families. You can do a number of things on that property that have nothing to do with golf, which kind of seems like it's what LIV is aiming for.
Yeah, I mean, all the guys all stay together, or they stay. I know when they were in England at the Centurion Club, they all stayed at a hotel put up by LIV. I mean, Greenbrier would be perfect. I mean, when the event was there, the tour event, it was, you know, Greenbrier is not going to, like you said, it's a second tier. It would be a second tier event on tour, depending on when they put it in the schedule. But, you know, it is a little vindictive and some would even say childish that LIV is going after these courses that the tour or the PGA have, you know, kind of pushed away. But what else are they going to do, right? I mean, Greenbrier's it's a very, very good golf course. You know, Bubba played there. Phil played there. Like you said, Tiger was there. Scott Stallings, who has had a resurgence. He was a winner there. Joaquin Niemann, he's a big-time winner. I don't blame them. I don't blame them for one bit for going after that venue. It's something they can bring their family to. Like you said, Cole, you'd love it. You know, a lot of shooting ranges, fishing at the Greenbrier. I mean, it's just like a destination spot, right? And no different than Doral. Doral's the same way. You know, you go to Miami. So, I think it would be great for them. You know, honestly, like, I'd love the tour to get back there, but like you said, Greg, put it in a better position on the schedule. You know, I know here in South Carolina, if you put a tour event, if you put Hilton Head in September, October here on a Saturday, Sunday that Clemson, Carolina play, Coastal Carolina play, like, no one's going. No one gives a shit.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, I think it deserves an event. And I like that at least somebody is seeing that.
Yeah, and I think it's – when you look too, I know not necessarily from a PGA Tour standpoint, but you mentioned a little bit of kind of like the history of the Greenbrier. Obviously, I touched – it's got a little bit of like the Sedgefield feel to it. Some 59s there. You know, Stuart Appleby, I know, shot a 59 there. I was actually there in 2019 when Kevin –
That's right. I forgot about that.
So, yeah, you know, and that's happened with Snedeker, and obviously it didn't happen with Tom Kim today, but he was in the mix to – you know, certainly being discussed for it over the first 12 or 13 holes today. But, you know, it just has that – it's not overly long. It's not necessarily overly difficult, but it's a pretty fair test of golf. You're going to run into 4 or 5 holes that, you know, if you hit a bad shot or two on them, you're going to make a bogey or maybe worse, and you're going to run into about 8 or 9 holes where if you play them right, you're going to have good shots to, you know, get opportunities to make birdies. I will say, you know, just having kind of discussed even with some of my friends in this state who are, you know, avid into golf kind of the way I am, they aren't necessarily as open to LIV as what they are to the PGA Tour, but they are certainly, would certainly be interested in attending a LIV event at the Greenbrier. And I think that's one thing to note is, you know, you look at some of the fields that the Greenbrier had on the PGA Tour, and there was great players that played in them, but you see some of these LIV events and it's like a hands-on experience. I mean, if you can tell someone, hey, you're going to be 5 feet from Dustin Johnson for 54 holes or what have you at golf, you could certainly find probably worse ways to spend 3 days.
Yeah, from what I've seen, the LIV events look fun as hell to go to.
Yeah,
I would go to one.
Yeah, it's great. It's kind of like a laid-back atmosphere. You know what I mean? It's like
right. There's
seems like it's more going on there than just, okay, be quiet, someone's hitting a golf shot. You know, it's like, well.
It appeals to the average fan, you know, not necessarily the hoity-toity type that people associate golf with.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I cannot wait to see if there is a LIV event there, who shows up to perform. You'd have to think maybe like Tyler Childers. I know he's from Kentucky, but he could be a good one for a performance there. I mean, Nelly was just in New York, so he has no ties to New York.
Yeah, I've seen Jimmy Buffett there 1 year, and Maroon 5 was there the next, I believe. That was back in – that was whichever year Angel Cabrera won it. And he felt at home. Yeah, he felt at home there. I remember he had an exact quote where he said it was his favorite stop on the tour because he could eat steak every night at Prime 44, which is Jerry West's steakhouse on the property.
And then beat his wife afterwards.
And now he's in jail. But yeah. or fresh out of jail. But
right.
But no.
Okay, I know we've kept you for a while today, but what do you see – if you had to look into your crystal ball in the next 3 years, what do you see the golf ecosystem? How's it all play out? And again, obviously, we're just speculating here. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't have inside information. But what do you see if, you know, you put it down on paper?
Well, I think, you know, ultimately, like we discussed a little earlier, we're moving in the direction where the PGA Tour and LIV are going to have to come to some sort of agreement to be able to either let players play on both, balance it, you know, have some sort of a balancing act. Because as we discussed a little bit earlier, you know, it's kind of easy as a golf fan to watch if you want both. You know, if you want both, you can watch both. But it's not easy as a golf fan necessarily to say, well, here's the FedEx Cup playoffs. We're not really sure 3 days before it if these 15 guys who are plenty good enough to play on it are going to be playing on it. We think they're going to play on it. We don't know that they're going to be playing on it. So it's kind of interesting from that aspect. But then you have the other side, and it's a side that I know you guys both probably have a lot of appreciation for, and that's your grinders that aren't living the necessarily, you know, high life, the first-class flights, your guys from, you know, Korn Ferry tours, mini tours, challenge tours, who are sleeping in their cars, are sleeping in, you know, whatever hotel they can get an opportunity to go through.
That are just breaking even or losing money every year trying to chase a dream.
And it's, I'm not necessarily saying he's one, but it's, you know, just like we talked a little earlier at Sedgefield today, and Justin Lauer has a 7-8 foot putt on the 18th hole. If he makes it, he's in the playoffs next week. If he misses it, he's not guaranteed to be on the PGA Tour, you know, moving forward. And he misses it. And, you know, it's tough to watch. It has to be somebody. I believe in round two, when they picked it back up Saturday morning, Austin Smotherman was in the same position. He had a birdie putt. It lipped out. He double bogeyed the next hole. That's it. End of the season. You know, and that's something that right now, and maybe even moving forward, you know, LIV isn't going to be able to give you those kind of stories. They can't, you know, they can give you a Henrik Stenson, a Louis Oosthuizen, a guy that has won at a high level, who's played golf at a high level, but his best golf is probably behind him. And maybe some of the guys in LIV still have their best golf in front of them. I don't think it would be, you know, out of line to think a Taylor Gooch or a Carlos Ortiz hasn't played the best golf of their career yet. And maybe several other guys, even if you go down to, you know, you guys are down there in Clemson country. I'm sure a lot of people would like Turk Pettit to play a little better here in the next few years.
No, he played well at Bedminster.
He did.
He was top five, top six, I think.
And they, Eugenio whatever his last name is, Chachar, they just got the, you know, from Oklahoma State. He was the number two amateur in the world. I think it's pretty safe to assume that we haven't seen his best golf yet, unless you think it was played as, you know, a sophomore or a junior in college. And that probably wasn't the case. So, you know, moving forward, the ecosystem, it's hard to say for me, wide open, but I think LIV is here to stay. I think it'll be here for a while. I don't think it's going to be something that just crumbles away in a year or two. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more big names jump. I know we all see the rumors, whether it's Hideki Matsuyama, Patrick Cantlay, Cameron Smith, obviously pretty heavily tied into it after his comments in the
break. I think if Hideki leaves for it, that's huge. Like, that might be the biggest get that LIV, you know. I mean, he gets the whole country of Japan.
Right.
Which he gets the entire Asian fandom.
Yep.
That stick behind Hideki. And now if he goes, and you know, what I had heard was $350 million, the biggest of them all, but these guys aren't stupid. So they know where the money needs to go.
Yeah, and like you said, you mean, think back to when Hideki won the Masters. It was an entire country. You know, I mean, that was basically the talk of it. It's not just, you know, this guy is literally playing golf for basically the support and backing and well-being, if you want to say, of, you know, Japan in its entirety. And it's pretty unique, because even a player of a Tiger stature, whose popularity will likely never be matched again, there are some people necessarily in America that don't, you know, want to see Tiger thrive, that don't care if Tiger wins as opposed to if Brant Snedeker wins. You know what I mean? And yeah, that's not the majority of the people, but I'd say your people in Japan, you're probably going to be hard pressed to find anybody that doesn't want Hideki Matsuyama to win a golf tournament. And if he goes to LIV, as you mentioned, it just continues to kind of grow what they're doing. You know, they've got big names. They're going to get more big names in all likelihood. They're probably going to get more big amateur names, but we see the way that it's trending four events in. We've seen some interesting golf. We've seen some interesting golfers. One thing I personally would like to see, outside of even a TV deal, which, as you mentioned earlier, makes it a lot more accessible to watch. You know, you can't just go to a bar right now and watch LIV golf. Not going to happen. Can't go to your local country club and watch LIV golf. You know, you basically have to be on your computer or on your phone to watch it. And one thing I would kind of like to see, if and when they are able to strike that TV deal too, is just maybe better overall website. You know, one thing I value as an avid golf fan and somebody that's going to follow all these guys from top to bottom is being able to find stats, which you can't find those on LIV guys right now. So you look at it, whether it's from a fan standpoint, a gambling standpoint, you know, you don't know what the edge is of Patrick Reed's driving distance and accuracy as opposed to Taylor Gooch or Abe Anser. And if I wanted to find that right now on Austin Smotherman as opposed to Callum Tarran, I could find it in one click on the internet, you know. And that's, and just like you can find the shot trackers. And if you're not watching a ton of golf, we've all, I'm sure, been in spots where, you know, we're not in a position to watch golf. So what do you have to do if you want to follow it? You go on the PGA Tour website and you're, what, 2 or 3 minutes behind someone's shot in their round. And okay, he hit it to 15 feet. Here's what he's got for his birdie, you know. And LIV, you go to the website and it's like, I don't know if Dustin Johnson's on hole 6, hole 11, hole 15. I mean, I have no idea. And, you know, as a golf fan, it's kind of frustrating because you guys know where you're at on the course matters. He might be playing a reachable par 5, or he might be playing a 240-yard par 3. You know, I have no clue. Like, and that's part that's a little bit frustrating. I watched some of the Bedminster event. I watched 2 out of the 3 days for, you know, maybe an hour or so here or there. I watched the ending on Sunday when Stenson was able to hold off Wolf and Johnson, and I would certainly watch it again. You know, but as you mentioned, eventually they're probably going to have to get to a point where people aren't having to go out of their way to watch it, you know, because the stories of the PGA Tour that are right there, a click away on your golf channel, even if it is an Austin Smotherman, a Justin Lauer, a whoever, a Chasen Hadley, those are stories that LIV can't really, you know, compete with. Those, they can't match that, at least as the system is set up now.
Not like they don't have the money for a good website.
That's another good point. Yeah. And I would think you would want that. You know, you want the clicks, the advertising, you want people to come there. Like, I would gladly pay a visit to the LIV Golf website to see how far away Dustin Johnson's birdie putt was, you know, instead of just refreshing it and saying, oh, did he make par? Did he make birdie? Is he in a bunker? Is he on the, I have no idea what's going, you know what I mean? And unless you're sitting there physically watching it. But I think TV deal, improvement to the website, and then a few more events being added, and particularly some in America, you could have a tour that is very heavily competing with the PGA, even more so than maybe what it is now, and continues to kind of draw the lure of fans in, because there's going to be people that never want to watch live. There's going to be people that bring up the Saudi Public Investment Fund and all of that, and that's never going to go away. You know, you're going to have people that don't want to hear it. They don't want to watch it. That's, you know, but you're also going to have people, like you said, they're golf fans. You know, if Dustin Johnson's playing at the Greenbrier, I don't care if he's playing in the West Virginia Open. I want to watch him. You know what I mean? I want to watch the guy play. I want to watch Dustin Johnson hit 340-yard drives and make 7-8 birdies in a round. You know, I want to watch Brooks Koepka, even if he's at the bottom of what, you know, he has been as a, you know, 5 years ago when he won 4 majors in 27 months or whatever it was. You know, I'd still like to watch those guys, because it's something that we don't really get an opportunity to do here. And generally speaking, unless you're an avid golf fan, you're probably not doing that more than once or twice in a calendar year.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, LIV is not going away, and I think we'd be doing a disservice to not talk about it. But we've been on here for a while, Greg, so I appreciate your time. Tell everybody where we can find you, your Twitter, your website, as far as what you write for and all that.
Sure, certainly. G Carey, C-A-R-E-Y, 938 is the Twitter handle, and WVMetroNews.com. You know, as Rusty said, live in West Virginia, went to West Virginia, and you know, I'm writing sports basically on a daily basis, whether it's West Virginia Mountaineers or high school sports, and you might even see some golf sprinkled in here and there. And I can guarantee you'll see some golf sprinkled in if the LIV or any of the tours get back to the Greenbrier. Been a pleasure, though, guys. Been a pleasure. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, man, we enjoyed it. I'll make sure to put it in the show notes. We'll get your Twitter handle and everything in there as well. But thanks for joining us. We appreciate your insight. Really enjoyed talking to you tonight.
I'd love to do it again. You guys have a good night. Hey, man.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Look forward to the polka dots.
Absolutely. Always. Great
student. The best high school in the country.
That's right. That's right. You guys be well.
All right, man.
Talk to you later.
Take care. All right. Well, that was good. I think we got a lot of good insight there. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, with Greg, you just get him talking. He just goes.
That's okay, though. Hey, it's a podcast. That's what we're supposed to do, talk, right?
That's right. Exactly.
Perfect. Well, let's jump to NFTs. I know that took a little longer than we maybe expected or planned for, but not a problem at all. Let's pop over to NFTs here. So for the Web3 part today, I figured we will start out with our segment that we introduced last time, the What's in Your Wallet segment. I will go first this week, and then we'll let you hop in. So this week, my What's in My Wallet is going to be a NFT project. Probably was my second or third one that I bought, and that is Brain Vomit, Brain Vomit's Garden. The artist behind that is Stephen Ray, and he's got a very interesting project. There's 4,444 NFTs that he drew. They're flowers, hence the garden piece. But right now the floor is sitting at 0.08. And I have two of them currently. One of mine is a rank 1,901. Then I have a rank 3,230. So that one's not quite as good. I actually like the lower one better. Looks a little better to my eye. But I've got two of those. And I also have a doodle. So he was doing a thing where he would create these doodles weekly. And there was going to be 444 of them, so you had a 10% chance of winning. And he would just randomly airdrop them into your wallet every week. And it was basically just like a doodle. He would work on a sketch pad and draw. So I got one of those airdropped to me. So I actually have three of his pieces currently. But big fan of the project. He's done a lot of cool stuff. He did a collab with Adam Bomb Squad, as we talked about last time, was one of my favorite NFTs. So I have one of those shirts where he did with them. He did a collab with Anwar Carrots as well, which was some more shirts and sweatshirts that were pretty cool. He also released free t-shirts to the Garden members. So if you owned NFT, you got a shirt, free t-shirt per NFT that you owned. And then they also are working on a metaverse for that community. I think it's a beta test right now where you can go in there and run around with your guy. But a lot of good stuff he's working on. He's also too dropping physical paintings, which aren't related to the NFT at all. But he is a very good... His work is really interesting. Y'all should go check him out, Stephen Ray. But his physical art is very interesting. And he dropped a couple paintings here in the last couple weeks where if you are one of the NFT holders, it's exclusive. That's the only way you could go on and buy it. You had to own the NFT, and then he shipped it to your house. So hopefully one of these days I'll get one for my wall here, but I'm waiting on the right one to show up.
That's a project that's based around like mental health, right? I mean, that's kind of where the brain vomit comes from. I heard when he was on Bomb Talk with Bobby Hundreds talking about how the project got going, and he was, I guess, in a dark spot, and his paintings really brought everything out to him, and kind of the brain vomit was the things coming out of his head, the way he thought of his mental health. And, I think you brought it to my attention shortly after you did Adam Bomb Squad. I never got into the project, but I've always really liked it and looked at the art as it's, and then they put some good writing on there. Be strong, keep growing, different little sayings that are there, just to give some people, that motivation. And, the project positive itself, encouragement. I think, has got a lot of legs to it. And I guess he's having another merch drop in August and then another one in October from what I saw. So,
yeah,
he's continuing to build.
Working on some solo stuff this time. I think he's working on maybe his own shoe line he's creating. I think he's got some jackets and some other things. Talking about the mental health and all, apparently he said the way he came up with the project, he was doing shrooms, and that's when he started drawing the garden. And I've heard that, artists say that before, that it helps you get, creative and all that. And yeah, I don't know, but I guess it worked for him. Because it's very creative, it's very colorful, it's very attractive to the eye, to me. That's a project I'm pretty bullish on. What you got in your wallet this week?
So I was going through the wallet a little bit and trying to see what I wanted to spotlight this week. And for me, it's Dented Feels, kind of in the same realm as Brain Vomit. I mean, if you look at the pictures, and it's more of a PFP project right now. I really like the one that I have. I bought it, I'm trying to think when I bought it, maybe 3-4 months ago. Floor now is at 0.07. So it's down from when I bought it, but that is what it is, with the way that the NFT space is happening right now. But these pictures are just, they just speak to you. They're ahead with, and Denton, who is the artist, came from Weather Report, which was the original project. And then there was some sort of, I don't know all the details because it's not exactly public, but he left Weather Report and then made his own project called Dented Fields. Well, Weather Report came out first. And I remember seeing that, and it looks identical. Like, I mean, if you go on OpenSea right now and look at the two projects, they're pretty much identical. But Denton is the creator of it. And I have a little guy. He's got, your normal kind of yellow emoji smiley face with one tooth. He's got nice. A mountain head to it. And I love the mountains. So this one kind of spoke to me because, Colorado to me is one of the most beautiful places in the country. And it reminded me of the Rockies. He's got a green bandana, paisley bandana around his head, kind of like a, not Tupac, but, when I was playing football as a kid, I wore a bandana because Deion Sanders did, right? So So it, you know, it kind of spoke to me. I like the project a lot. It has a lot of good backing, as far, you know, from some of the influencers or some of the bigger names in the NFT world. It's just a good project, and I believe, again, I'm not into Discord because I really despise Discord. But there's something coming soon, and it's pinned on his tweets. And there's something coming very, very soon, something big. And I don't know what it is, but I can't wait to find out. So, you know, again, never going to be financial advice, but if you want to get in on this project right now, is a good number to buy at, because it's, I bought it, I think 0.18 when I got in. Now we're at 0.07, but again, we can't really take floor prices as the savior right now with pretty much every project just tanking.
Yeah, everything's down. I didn't say where I bought. I think I brought those brain vomits around like 0.39 maybe, upper threes, and this is 0.08. So down bad, but as you mentioned, everything is. So, you know, what can you do? What can you do? But I didn't know you had that Dentafields. That's pretty cool. I know I've seen the project. I don't own one myself, but I do like the art. And I didn't know you bought that one. That's cool.
Yeah, it was just one of those spur of the moment buys, and I got in because I saw a bunch of people that I trust and respect in different facets of not just Web3, but other sports and whatnot. So I'm happy with it. You know, I continue to check it all the time. It's one I continue to hold on to.
Very nice. I don't know if you saw, there's a couple of big things come out this week that I have pinned here. But one of the biggest, I guess, news pieces in NFTs or Web3 this week was Moonbirds moving over to the CC. So they say it two different ways, CCO or CC0. Kevin Rose announced that 3 days ago. I guess that was, what, Thursday or Friday, that he was taking his whole project Moonbirds and Moonbirds Oddities to CCO. And I wanted to dive into that, but first I will let our audience know, for those that don't, kind of what a CCO is. CCO is basically a Creative Commons. What's that?
And your co-host.
And your co-host. Everybody know here, those that don't, but CCO is basically a Creative Commons. So basically he's extending the rights to his owners of the project, that they can take that NFT and do whatever they want with it, basically giving up the commercial rights to it, so they can, you know, have derivatives. They could use it to make coffee mugs, you know, you name it, without infringing on the copyrights, you know, that normally would be in place. So it's a CCO. There's no rights reserved, which is the zero. Creative Commons is a form of copyright that enables the creator to allow the NFTs to be owned by others, gives them the full rights for commercial purposes, and there's no need for them to go back and give attribution to the original creator. And so he just announced that this week. Pretty big news. Moonbird's floor right now is at 17.2 ETH. Oddities is around 1 ETH, so it'll be interesting to see how that moves with that announcement. Kevin said the idea behind it was to just go along with the nature of Web3, right? To where no big corporations are controlling the art. It's up to the community. He is forming a Moonbirds DAO to kind of protect it a little bit, to where people can't take it and use it for, you know, hate speech or violence or, you know, scams. So they will have a DAO in place to kind of monitor that. But other than that, I think you can pretty much do whatever you want with it. And, so it's an interesting time. You know, Goblins was kind of the first ones to start this CC0, you know, trend. And it looks like we're starting to see some bigger names hop on that train.
Yeah, I saw a lot of chatter on Twitter this weekend and later in the later part of last week on Moonbirds. And I wasn't 100% sure on what it was. And I guess with this new initiative that they're doing, I don't think you've seen it in the floor price, but you've seen a lot of chatter.
Yeah, and that's kind of the idea behind the CCO is you know, that it brings brand awareness back to the original, right? So if you have a bunch of derivatives, you're still thinking of the original art. So that's kind of the whole idea behind it, that eventually everything kind of points back to that original piece or collection. So yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that works out. You know, if you look at Goblins, you know, that was kind of a huge hit to kind of start these things off. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, if you're looking at something like CryptoPunks, you know, they do not have CC0, so you're not allowed to do really anything with that. But they're taking that to like Hollywood to maybe portray those pieces in movies or whatever too. So I could see either sides of it. I think Kevin was just, you know, and he said, which was interesting, he said he was not going to allow it to ever be changed from that. So, you know, now it's set in stone. It will always be a CCO project. Interesting time. Originally, he was very against it, you know, when he first started the project. So,
you know, yeah, I heard that on a pod, on Gary V's pod.
Yeah.
Kevin was on it, and he was against it. But something up. There was another piece to that pod, but... Yeah, it's interesting. I think maybe you'll start to see some of these other projects go that route if, you know, with the success of this one, you know, with Moonbirds. Because it, you know, Moonbirds is now a quote unquote blue chip, I would say at this point, when, you know, it's up there with all the other ones. I did see that Striker, who is Striker, Bored Ape, just signed on with the MLS All-Star Game. So there's going to be a Bored Ape portrayed with the MLS All-Star Game, which is pretty cool. So I guess would Bored Ape be considered a CCO project if they're able to do that, or is that something different?
That's a little different. They still own the IP rights to the Bored Apes. Yuga does. So I think they would... whoever's ape that is, that they probably had to get permission and to do all that. It's not necessarily the owner of the ape going out. And I think they have some, they're not a complete CCO. They do have some rights as an owner of the ape, but there's a lot of governance to it where you can't do certain things. That one's a little different.
Gotcha. I think in a couple episodes, or maybe the next one, I think we should dive into what a DAO is.
Okay, yeah.
I think getting into that, letting our listeners know that some of the feedback that I've received from people is, you know, that don't know the Web3 space. They love like the little nuggets that we can give, and they're Googling and they're on Twitter and they're learning about it. So I think it's, you know, it's
yeah, we can definitely dive into that DAO, you know, decentralized autonomous organization, if you're looking it up. But we'll definitely dive in next show on that. I had a buddy of mine, I was like, man, I love your pod, but what is ETH? Y'all keep talking about ETH. So ETH is Ethereum, the cryptocurrency. So if y'all are wondering that as well. But yeah, we can definitely maybe create a little glossary or word terms too when we do some of this and break it down.
Like an SAT word of the day.
Okay, yeah. New
Something
segment.
Like that.
New segment alert.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm writing that down. And other news though, the other thing I noticed this week was pretty big. I don't know if you saw this or not, but, Starbucks mentioned that they were going to be coming out with a Web3 rewards program, basically an NFT, project. Did you see that?
I did see it. I assume it's just going to come in like really hot and taste like shit.
So I don't know if you remember this, but listeners, if you want to go back, episode one, we talked about this, how NFTs could be used in a coffee shop as a reward. So, yeah, I'm sure you remember, but I specifically mentioned this. And so Starbucks is saying that I think next month at their one of the tech conferences they're doing, they are going to announce this, but it's going to be coffee themed. It's not just going to be, you know, a digital piece, but it's going to gain the owners access to exclusive content and other perks is what they're saying. Basically an extension of their customer loyalty program that they already have in place, right? You get a little Starbucks card and every fifth one gets you a coffee or whatever it is. I don't go to Starbucks, but whatever the customer loyalty program is, they're expanding on top of that. I saw that they're bringing in Adam Brotman, who was he's going to be a special advisor for this project. And he is the one that actually developed their mobile app and order pay system, which was kind of the digital wallet before Apple Pay was even a thing. So they were pretty early in this. And it seems like they're following that trend to be one of the bigger corporations to jump into Web3. But I think it sounds like they're taking their time on it as well, not just kind of hopping in. But they, I was reading an article that said last Q3, mobile orders on their app and whatnot were 72% of their U.S. revenue. So if you think about that and merging that over to NFTs, I don't see why it wouldn't be extremely successful. They're looking at the younger generation and trying to bring more value to their current customers with these exclusive perks, but also bring in some new users as well. So I thought it was pretty interesting. More to come on that next month when they...
And you know, you're starting to see that transition from collectability to with a little bit of utility to the utility starting to take over. You know, you're seeing it in every project. I mean, some of the projects you and I have been talking about, the Lynx DAO, the even the Crypto Country Club that was heavily talked about last week. You know, that the utility is really starting to come to the forefront.
Yeah, that's something we discussed episode one. Yeah, so far, we're two for two.
That's love right. We were ahead of our time.
Yeah, man. Love it. Well, cool. That was kind of all I had on the Web3. I know we were took a little more time on golf this week, but was there anything else that you wanted to add for Web3?
No, just been, you know, really taking a look at the market right now. So there's a lot of projects out there that we've wanted to get into, and you know, you and I talk to them all the time about them. A lot of good buying points right now. Dead Fellows, I think, was 0.9. Down to 0.84, which is really good for that project. You know, ETH has been pretty steady. You know, I think it bumped up a little bit. It's around 1700.
Yep.
I'm not mistaken.
Stay pretty steady right around there, 16 to 17 ish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bitcoin's at 23.2, so it's starting to make its way up. But where's Solana?
See, I don't pay attention to Solana at all, to be honest. I should, but I don't have any Solana NFTs.
I don't either. I don't really
own any Solana,
especially after last week when everybody got hacked.
Yeah, good thing we did it.
Try to stay away from it. But shit, yeah. I mean, ETH gets to 2,000. That'll be good. Sit on my face good. But
yeah, man. I got to love it. Hopefully we'll play it a little bit this week and kind of see what happens. You know, you never know with cryptos. It could shoot up, it could go down. It's kind of a weird time right now. I know that the stock market's been going or trending back upwards recently, so crypto tends to follow a lot of times, and we'll just kind of have to see how it plays out with everything else going on in the world. But we did have our other segment that we got to put in here, the NFT it up. This is one that you brought to us. I did our the Bettinardi NFT last week for the NFT it up. So what you got for us this week?
So I was doing some research this past week on some golf projects, continuing, you know, going with the theme of the show, the Web3 Putts theme. And there's this project that I came across actually a few months ago and didn't really dive too deep into knowing what it was. Thought it was pretty cool. But it's a company called Malbon Golf. Malbon, and I don't know the exact way to put it, but they're kind of like a streetwear golf brand. I sent you over the link with their clothing. It's a big clothing line. They have a physical store in New York City in Soho, and they brought out a project called the Buckets Club, and it's an NFT project consisting of unique characters based on the iconic Buckets logo from Malbon Golf. Owning a bucket gives you access to an exclusive club of holders with added value that grows over time with full transparency on the Ethereum blockchain. And their first launch, their Genesis project, was 1,000 unique characters. And when you look at that on the OpenSea with the floor 1.39, which is pretty damn solid. Then they came out with what's called the front nine. So my guess is that they're coming out with a back nine at some point soon. But the front nine is they brought these characters to life in 3D. And there was 3,000 unique characters with that one. That floor is not as high. It's 0.27. No, 0.37. That jumped up a lot in the last couple of days. But the cool thing about them is it doesn't look like there's a whole lot listed for sale. There's one for 0.37, then you go to 0.5, then 1.1, and then 19.95. So it's even though there's close to 3,000 items in this project, they're not. And it doesn't look like that when from my research, I don't believe that they've actually been revealed yet. So there's some utility with this project. Some of their clothing, like I probably wouldn't wear a lot of the clothing, but for sure the hats. Like I'm all in on some of these hats that they have. Love a good hat. I saw a collection for you, Cole, that I thought was right up your alley called the Bass Club.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. And they have a sick hat that says the Malbin Golf and Bass Club. Could see you rocking that in your next lesson that you're going to actually record for us so everybody can watch. But
So I put a few sneak peeks out there. I don't know if you saw that.
I did. But I think we need to go all in. But this project, I reached out to them earlier today. Granted, probably not the best time on a Sunday morning to reach out to get some information, not so much to have them on, but just maybe to give me a little bit more, talking points for them. But it's definitely a project, definitely a company that I'm going to keep my eye on going forward. I plan on buying a hat very soon. The hats are sick. Like they're right up my alley. They have some buckets with the bucket hats with the bucket logo on it. It looks like a cool project, cool company. They partner with Evian. They partner with Budweiser.
Have any bucket hats?
Yeah, bucket hats. They have some bucket
Do you
hats.
Have any? Do you rock them on the golf course, bucket hats?
I don't, but sometimes cutting the grass, I like to rock a bucket.
Yeah, I did earlier today, for sure.
1,000 degrees here in South Carolina, and I like to cut the grass for some reason at the worst part of the day. So a bucket goes well there. And it's a cool project, cool company. Again, I said that a couple times, but just something to check out for our listeners. So that's what this whole segment's about, is bringing that awareness to other golf projects in the Web3 and in the golf world. And we'll get into that more, and hopefully down the line we'll have some of these projects, the founders and people associated with it as guests, to talk even more about it. But just wanted to bring that awareness to everybody.
Malbin, send us some buckets.
We'll
cut some mean grass in those buckets.
That's absolutely right. Like this blue one, the Malbin. Oh, Spider. They partnered with Spider, like the ski brand Spider. Vortex hat.
Nice.
You should wear that on your boat while you're fishing.
Dude, yeah, Malbin sounds like they're right at my alley. We need a partnership. Holler at us.
How about respond to my tweet first?
Yeah.
And then we'll get it going.
That's right. Yes, I know you mentioned I did have another lesson last week. It was, I talked about how bad my driver was last week with snap hooking off maybe 150 yards, just dive, bomb left. Went in there, talked to my man Bill. In about 30 minutes, he had me straightened out. So we shall see. I'm not going to be able to play, or I didn't get to play this weekend. I had that wedding I told you about. I was out of town. And then I got to travel for work this week. But I have a big tournament this weekend. The Varner Invitational. So my buddy and his lovely wife put on this tournament every year for his birthday weekend. have a bunch of guys out and we go play a couple courses around here. And it's kind of like the best member guest you can imagine because it's all your friends, right? And so we're having this big tournament. They've arranged some food trucks, some beer trucks. I think Helen is getting us all Titleist golf bags with our names on them. Yeah, you can see I'm rocking this hat here. It's got my name on it, Varn Invitational, last year's gift. But some really good tee gifts. I had a good showing last year. Me and my partner Shane really were throwing down, and then he left me. Left me as his wife called him and was pretty upset. So he left me on the third 18 of the day. But, you know, what can you do? But, yeah, looking forward to that. So I've got to get some work done in Orlando and get back here for the tourney.
So how do I get involved in the Varner Cup for next year? Do I have to be better friends? I mean, this sounds amazing.
You got to show your face down here, man. You got to show your face. But yeah, I'll put in a good word for you for sure. Maybe we can line up the pod for that weekend too.
That'd be good. We could do it on site. I mean, I assume that you're playing some good courses. Chichesse, is that in there?
Yep. So we're playing Chichesse, and then we're playing Old Tabby, Spring Island.
Very nice. Very nice. Yep.
We got 12 guys right now. So yeah, we'll have to maybe kick somebody out for next year, bring you down.
Love it.
Should be a good time.
Love it. I actually, before we get out of here, I did a little quick range sesh on Thursday. I took my middle child to the driving range, and it was hotter than hell. You know, we were there for like 30 minutes and it was just drenched in sweat. Driver was awful. I think just talking to you made it bad. you know, the wedges were money. I mean, they were hitting the 100-yard marker with the 60, just bang, 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 bang. Nice. But the way I was hitting the driver, I mean, it was driver. We were playing a golf course. It was driver, 6-iron, punch out, 100-yard wedge.
I know that,
you
know, well.
Yeah, maybe making a par. And, you know, I was thinking what you talked about, you know, with your wife being pissed off, you know, do you really want, and I know you went and got her some new grips on her irons or her clubs, right?
Yeah.
So that would make me think that you and her are going to go out and play sometime soon. And she's already pissed about your lessons.
Yeah.
Do you think it's wise to take her to play golf when you're hitting it the way you're hitting it currently? Because she'll just get even more pissed, because she'll be like, you wasted a couch and a new car on lessons and you can't even get off the tee. Do you think there could be an issue there?
Yes and no. She might love it because she would be hitting it better than me and probably rub it in my face. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't, you know, I was more so getting her the new grips so that we can maybe get away from my lessons and whatnot for a little bit. But yeah, I think she would actually probably rub it in my face because she's been playing for about a year. She's not really, you know, I think a lot of women struggle hitting irons, right? They can't hit down, you know, into the ball, into the ground, and to make it go up, you know, whatever. But with the driver, she hits bombs. I mean, 175 off the tee, no problem. And from the ladies' season, a lot of these courses, it's a huge advantage. So when I'm snap hooking it, she's probably 100 yards past me with the deepies. So yeah, she would probably love it until she had to hit an iron the next shot.
I just love the fact that she's pissed at you for spending money on lessons. So you then take her to a golf store and then spend more money on something golf related for her, thinking it's just going to make it all good. Like, I just think that's amazing. And I wish I had that sort of pull on my end.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole thing started going back. I was playing way too much golf, and I was gone, you know, all day Saturdays because we play 36 usually most days. And so I'd come home, and she'd be very upset that I was gone all day while she was doing housework or something, you know, whatever. So I said, "Babe, you know, you got to start playing golf. It's a great game. You know, you need to really, really learn it." So I took her out there last year and loves it, absolutely loves it. The problem I've got myself into now is that she wants to play all the time, but so do all my buddies too. So now I'm having to juggle, like, you know, how do we get you out there? How do I still play my Saturday game with the boys? You know, but it's fun, man. We have a good time. We usually go out there maybe Fridays after work Get out there. We can get 18 in if you get out there by 4:30. Or on Sundays we'll play in the afternoons when there's nobody out there. And just kind of mess around. But it's worked out well for me. She loves the game. And now she understands why I'm spending so much money and why I'm always gone for so long, because she actually gets it now. So it actually was a good move on my part.
Well, good luck. Happy wife. Happy life.
Get to scratch.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm trying. So I had a buddy of mine that's been taking lessons with the same guy. He just shot a 71 yesterday. So hopefully, he's been going a little bit longer than I have. So I'm planning on getting there here soon.
Only 20. You just got to shave 20 off. That's it.
20. I just got to make a few putts here or there, and I'll be good. What's one or two putts around? Finding AK. I did a little searching today.
You did, because I got nothing right now.
Nothing. Okay. So I read this article about AK, and it was actually some other guys. I forget the name of the podcast, but they were interviewing Chris Goderup. He is a senior at OU.
Yep.
Where AK went to school.
He went to Rutgers first, then he transferred to OU. He was the number one player in NCAAs up until finals.
Yep.
He's had a good run on the PGA Tour lately. So,
yep, I think he's playing the Canadian Tour right now, still trying to get onto the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, he might have his card for next year on the PGA Tour. I don't think he got into let me see. Hold on real quick. This is, again, good podcasting. But
so while you're looking for that.
Yeah, let's hear
this article, they were interviewing him, and – they were asking him about AK, and he said his coach at OU always brings him up, and they have so many of these crazy stories, but the guy's still a ghost to them, right? He's a legend, and he wouldn't dive into the stories at all, really. He said he couldn't, but apparently they were really good about how good AK was, just an extreme freak of nature, you know? And he said that they see AK up there hitting balls every now and then. He comes by and we'll hit the practice range, and they watch him just like amazed at how good he still is and that he's not playing golf, that he still is just unbelievably freakish in how good he can hit the ball. So apparently he's been hitting balls at OU. I don't know when this was or whatnot. It was earlier this year, I think, was the interview, but they say he hits balls at OU.
I mean, why would you, if you don't want to play, why would you be hitting balls? He's got a plan. He's coming back.
Might be. So if anybody knows or wants to riff off of that, anybody in Oklahoma, fans in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, us being what, the 83rd ranked golf pod? 82nd?
Yeah.
I mean, we got to get some listeners in Oklahoma. So we got our first listener in across the pond, right?
Yeah, the UK.
So let's go. We need all the help we can get.
Yep. The whole world is watching.
Cole's going to give you an ETH if you find AK. So
I don't know about that. I'm not going to give away an ETH, but we should do some giveaways on the pod here soon.
We will absolutely.
Maybe we'll do a round of golf on us somewhere, Oldfield, or with us, and we'll pay for the round. If you find AK, it'll be way better than that, but. I'm just spitballing here. Well, cool, man. I think that's all I got for now. Everybody, if you like the podcast, do us a favor, download so you can stay up to date with all our releases. Give us a rating and subscribe, and follow us on our socials at Web3Putts on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And we'll hopefully have some YouTubes out here soon as well, but no videos there yet. But anything else you got to add, Rusty? I know it's Sunday night here. It's getting pretty late.
Nope, I'm good. You know, I did one last thing. I did put out a poll on Instagram on what guests our listeners would like to see. And Bobby Wagner from the Rams, I guess now. Was a popular pick. So I don't know how that fits in with the whole Web3 and golf thing, but I do know that he's into the investing side from other podcasts I've listened to with him. So maybe he is into the crypto world. So, you know, never say never. And, you know, Bobby Wagner would be awesome. But
Bobby too hottie. That might coming be, on the show.
That might be a pipe dream or just, you know, we'll work on it is all I can say. But if somebody has some real people to talk to, please reach out and we'll make it happen.
Absolutely. Good to see you as always, man. Have a good week.